So we have Pam sitting with us, and today I brought James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake, and I have some thoughts about this, but mainly I think it should just be a fun party game. So what I want you to do is I want you to pick any page at random and try and read out loud from Finnegan's Wake.
Try. Defense in every circumstances of debaucheries. Know the chaste daffs. Pack pickets. Pie oaks. That's a hard one.
That's good. You're doing good.
And knugs. To be palsy.
No, what you gotta do is you just gotta power through it.
Yeah.
Just pound through it. Like you're just like you don't even know what the word is because it's not a real word.
You're swimming swimming out in the surf.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you just gotta like.
I'm like, this is harder than that French one from earlier. Be at the peem, please, of not forgetting to merle be talking yourself to other price. Correct me. Pleats, commando for Cossacks, but I abjure of it. No more basque bezicues for this pole apparition.
That was great.
Beautiful reading.
You did a great job. That was perfect.
James Joyce is just like happy.
Wow.
Here, now,
it was like reading backwards.
Now I'll give it a no.
But the beauty of Finnegan's Wake is it doesn't matter where you open it up or where you start reading because it's infinite. It was after Einstein's theory of relativity. No beginning, no end. We're just like...
It's basically making up his own language. I mean, it's all supposed to be, Irish, just thick, roguish dialect, right?
Okay, go ahead.
But it's there's too many different words for it to possibly make any sense. There's just no way anybody could read this from beginning to end and make heads or tails of what's actually going on. For, with that famfrau's foul flare, for that fally fell fox fetter, the calamite's calumnitous calling for a calamitous calamitance, who that scrutinizing marvels at those indignant whip-loop lashes, those so prudently bolted or blocked rounds, the touching reminiscence of an incomplete trail or dropped final, around thousand whirly giggle glory giggles, prefaced by, alas, now ineligible airy plume flights. Why alas in that sentence? I don't know.
Because he finally found it?
Yeah. Well, you know, but see, I have just enough Latin to know that we're talking about them catamites. What? I mean, he plays with that.
The catamites?
This is Sodom and Gomorrah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then the whiplash. Okay. I mean, it's all in there, yeah.
Wait, what does that have to do with Sodom and Gomorrah?
Catamites are sodomites. That's how it is. I mean, the whole thing is just, he's just doing this historical... tomfoolery.
Wow, you could have.
But see, you read it so beautifully. I could pick up, you know,
the way the tone was. Okay.
Well,
maybe it'll be the same for me. You read it.
Fortunately, gentle listener, we did not, you know, register the page number, so you know you can't check with us. But no, you could hear it in there.
I want to see if you can read a paragraph, and if I can make heads or tails.
And that celebrated sicanagier of yours have tea spilled all my hazy densy. Forge away, sunny sim, ship shop, bleating goad, it is the least of things I insty. Imagine it, my deep Dartry dullard, it is ours giving, not more. I'm only out for celebridging over the guilt of the gap in your hissidensity. You are 100,000 times welcome, old wart sampler, hell bay it. You're just about as culpable as my Woodfell merger would be. In effect, I could engage in an argument over you till you were republically royal and two-bally prussic blue in the shirt after.
So it sounds like he's just insulting someone, basically. Like that's all I could gather out of that.
It gets a different tone totally from what you read. I mean, he's going through like 1,000 different voices in this book is all I can figure out. I've never read the whole book. I've read one or two pages, just like we're doing, and just had a jolly laugh. But it's just like, I think the idea is that if you listen, the metaphor that somebody once told me or I dreamed was that it's like you're at the edge of this big gurgling river, and the river suddenly takes on the voices of every human being that's ever lived.
Yeah.
In Ireland. But this is the river Litha, right? That's the idea. And Gunnar Grass in The Flounder does the same thing kind of with the River Elbe. It's like how the river takes all the spirits of the past, all the people, and they're just, you know, and it's just, but it's googly. It's googly goggly. You
know? that's the most, the kindest way to put it, I think. I mean, the other kind way I would put it is, you know, it's not a novel. It's just an art piece.
Right.
You know, it's just a book that exists. It's like, what's interesting about it is that it exists. You know, it's a culmination of a certain type of life's work. And
and
I was going for my walk today, and I was just thinking about how often I, like, sort of mechanize myself in order to accomplish things. And then when I was going for my walk, I was thinking, like, oh, this is something I'm just doing to get exercise so I can do the podcast later or whatever. But then I was like, no, but this is actually life. This is what I enjoy doing. Like, why shouldn't art just be totally fun and frivolous? Like this. Like with the story you told me about when he was sitting down to write it, his wife would say he was just laughing out loud.
He was laughing out loud. They're like in Bulgaria or somewhere, and they're being hounded all the way across Europe by the Nazis because he is, you know, Ulysses has got a Jewish. Joyce was known as a lover of the Jewish culture, you know, and they're chasing him all over, Pam, and Nora wakes up in the middle of the night and to him laughing uproariously as he's working over the galleys of this. I mean, that's just spectacular.
Did they think it was written in code when it was written?
I don't know. Do you? I should have looked up if what the initial.
Well, that's the other point. Jonah's always making subtle little points. Yes. I mean, it after all is code, because how did this book arrive? You know, where did this code come from? Yeah. And it took one of the greatest geniuses of my, you know, you just got to open it up and have a drink and just enjoy it. There's no way you're going to get all those syllables. I missed, like, as you notice, I missed about 18 of them in only 36. I'm trying to see ahead, but so let's hear another one.
Okay. And honestly, these are just totally random. Well, this one is so I started looking down this paragraph, so I was looking for a period, so I could start at the next sentence, and I realized that this whole page is just one long sentence. So, yeah, so there's other stuff like that, where, the whole page is just one long sentence. Okay, so I can just start in the middle of a sentence, then. The litigants, he said, local Kongsmen and Donalds, kings of the Arans and the Dulkeyes, kings of Mud and Tory, even the Goat King of Killorglin, were egged on by their supporters in the shape of better women with bow-strung hair of Caerath the Genuine ruddiness. It's like Caerath the Genuine, but he combines the word
Carthaginian
with the word genuine.
Yeah, Carthaginian.
So he's just doing something. It's like, you fucking asshole. Like, you're just trying to be. You're just trying to be witty.
I've never seen a word that long.
Mize.
No, this one right here.
Non-communicables.
Oh.
But you kind of
look like it was all O's.
But you kind of see a bunch of drunken Irishmen riding in the street, you know, or at a bar, you know, arguing. I mean, that had at least a little bit of reality to it.
Yeah, well...
I mean, look at Irish politics, right?
Well, when I... See, maybe there's this somewhat magic that happens when you just hear the words instead of trying to fixate on reading the words, because,
we should have worked on one page, but it doesn't, I don't even think it matters, because, but yeah, next time we'll do that. Since you told me that we achieved 150 viewers after Finnegan's Wake, it might drop a little bit.
Of course it is. Well, and that other one.
Okay, I'm going to try one.
Okay.
So what are we going to do after this in this podcast?
I don't know.
And a gorger's bulby onion, margaretter, margaretar, margarastandistitar, and as well with second course, and then finally after his avalanche o'clock snack at Apple Red's or Kitty Broughton's, a saddlebag steak and a bother him with her old Phoenix porter, jister Gwyn his gwistle and pretty's sweet and Irish too, and mock gurgle to whistle his way through for a swallowing swoop swoop, and he getting his tongue around it and Boland's broth broken into the bargain, to his regret, his soupe avec nightcap, vital lucid, a purisal consistent with second course iron beckon, the rich of with broad beans, big steak, hag, pepper, the diamond bone, hotted tim-tom, and while 'twas after he scoffed at drakeling, snugly stuffed, falling gold loin of veal, more cabbage, and ling, snugly stuffed, following cold loin of veal, more cabbage, and in their green free street, a clister of peas. Suppositorily petty, last, P.S., but a finger hot of Rhine Gniver to give the Pax come spiritutu, dryly thankful.
And this is the book he said that it took him 10 years to write, so it should take you 10 years to read it, right? Isn't that what he said about it?
Really? Yeah. My God. Oh my God. Well, you're just so astonished. You're just so astonished. So is he totally crazy?
No, I think, I don't know, the best, you can counter this if you want, but the best I can get is, it's just doing something completely free and art. It's just art. It's like when you go to a museum, you don't love every piece that's in a museum. Sometimes it just exists to explain a time period or just to be a relic of some artistic enterprise. It's like, I sort of think the same way about Brodkey's Runaway Soul. You know, it's like, you can't sit there and get through the whole book and like figure out what the hell is going on with the plot. It's just a piece of art piece. You open to a page, you read a passage, you're like, oh, that's strange. I think that same thing is almost true of David Foster Wallace's Infinite Jest in a weird way. You know, it's like, it's just a big art piece, like, that's indicative of its place in time. It's not really supposed to be a good novel, because the novel conceits are thrown out the window anyway.
Well, interesting.
I don't know. That's the best I could come up with.
Right. But still, my question is, how did he do that, though? I mean, I could smoke all the pot, all I wanted, all day long. And there's no way, and there must be some method to how he disarranged all these words and put them together again. I mean, he had to have some method.
That's true.
I mean, even Jackson Pollock, at least, you know, had, you know, a bunch of, you know, glue things. I mean, just reading that, I mean, I'm just totally astonished. And you can see, what's so interesting about Joan is that he's placed you in the position of the reader as like, you're just so happy to get anything out of five or six words in a row that you feel almost, you know, like affectionate toward it. Like, because you're out to sea the whole time. You're just totally out to sea.
Yeah.
when you read it, it flowed. Like, you read it with a flow. When I read it, I staggered because I was struggling to read it.
But it was fun to hear you read it, though.
But when you read it, you know, you almost get the story from it just from your tones that you use when you read it.
Right. It was like, it's like when you hear, when you're in France or somewhere, or Germany, and you're drunk, and you don't know the language. Well, actually, I know French, but I didn't know just about any other language. You actually can pick up just little points of light, of meaning, where you can figure out what they're talking about. if you're intoxicated, if you're just picking up the field, and that's where we get to come up with a cool repetition of the idea of field theory, where it's all about just seeing the field, and you'll pick up more, you know, information than you will by trying to you know, parse it.
Yeah, that's true. But also, like, you know, how in Blank, Malcolm Gladwell, he had the guy who was the lie detection expert. There's so much you can read with just facial expressions and gestures. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of human interaction doesn't need words, mm-hmm. especially if you're just talking about really basic things.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you know, like, as long as it's not getting to a deep level like this, you know, it's you can really get along with just gestures.
Which makes us wonder, why doesn't somebody, we've got to televise a couple of people reading, doing, you know,
and just
counterbalancing, and face them and get their facial expressions and everything, and see how this text comes out that way. Because I picked up at least three or four different scenes. One of them almost had the drunken bar street argument scene, political scene, and then the one
that's
food,
putting, yeah,
and
that's
then
the one way more out of,
and then
I'm
the one food scene, and the food scene, the gastronomic scene, and then, but there was one that had almost a legalistic thing, whereas there's a legalistic thing going on,
okay,
which I had a hard time with.
Jeez,
but you can see certain little themes going on there.
You are picking up more than I am, because
I'm ahead of you. I had a beer before you came.
Well, I just like, I like the idea that you're actually picking that up, because there's somewhere around the middle of a paragraph where I just start zoning out and I can't help it. Like, I don't think, like, you'd read a whole page and I'd start zoning out in the middle, no matter how hard I tried. I'd start focusing on one of those back words and I'd be like, what? Mm-hmm. What was that word? And I'd get like too distracted that.
Right.
To let it. Well, I don't know.
Well, I don't think anybody can read more than the page.
Yeah.
Because like Pam said, it all flows, it all rolls along, and finally one of those waves just goes over you and you just fucking die.
Okay,
you just
all right, here's
float out.
Here's a single sentence. We'll try and deconstruct a single sentence. Axe on thwax on thrax, comma, axon wise. That's the sentence.
And it's got anthrax in it, and it's got flax in it. It's got agricultural. It's just a purely agricultural Georgic sentence. I threw in Virgil there.
Okay, so here's the sentences before to give you context. Some divide and some the lot, but the tally turns round the same Balufson. Racketeers and bootloggers. No, not bootloggers. Bot loggers. B-O-T-T loggers. Okay, and then axe on thwax.
But that's also agricultural. Bot, a bot fly. I'm telling you, man, that's just
bot loggers.
That is an agricultural. Every image in there is agricultural.
Yeah. Bot loggers.
A bot fly.
Bot loggers.
Fastens on the cow and
lays eggs in it.
But what does that have to do with logging?
Well, it's got anthrax in it. I'm just telling you, it's an agricultural, the woes of agriculture, like in like 50, 20 words.
Okay, well, the sentence after goes, two nurses, one make a plausible free and it him behind. Starting off with a big bow-bow, that's a treat, and three-legged calvers and evergreen jadises with their message in their mouths. What? Look, you might be right, calvers.
With their message in their mouth.
Larva out of you, right?
And that's kind of like a cartoon. You can see the bubble of the cartoon, you know, and they're going bow wow. Oh, it's brilliant, man. It's fantastic. It's a lot of fun.
I'm impressed with your ability to do this.
I can't wait to see what my son is going to think of this book. I'm going to have to get it for him because he's such a logical thinker. He's a Sagittarius, so he's like, he's very intellectually smart.
Uh-huh.
And I just would like to give that to him, to give him a run for his money.
see if he can figure out the puzzle.
I think he'd...
This will get us one more listener to our podcast, too. Oh. Yeah, we'll have to do a revised... Yeah, well, I mean, the greatest story that I've... What's so wonderful is that the greatest friendship in Paris was Ernest Hemingway and James Joyce. And James Joyce was the slender, you know, by then he was older and he's pretty frail and also blind. From reading all the time, you know he just read all the languages. He had all of it there. It was all in his head. But he would go into bars in the tougher parts of Paris and don't adjust your skirt, Pam, it's distracting. And there will always be some tough, you know, low-class punks like there are in any bar in any town in the world, or machinists or somebody.
Sure.
And they would be giving, and of course, James Joyce would be like, you know, with his Irish, you know, and they would undoubtedly be, kind of sulkily looking over. And James Joyce would turn to Ernest and say, take care of him, Ernest.
Right.
Yeah. Take care of him. Because Ernest Hemingway was one of the most powerful fighters on, you know, at least in any bar you're going to walk into. So anyway, yeah. I just love that because James Joyce just loved peeking around Hemingway because for once he could just be totally himself, be totally joyous, and not be afraid of being, you know, beaten up and thrown out the door. And
What do you think he was doing to piss these guys off so much? Do you think
I think James Joyce might have been the most glorious person. Also, he was a great singer. He was known as one of the greatest Irish tenors around. And you know that once he got lit and started talking, it was just like nobody in the bar is going to even be able to like concentrate. Because here's this skinny, tall guy just kind of like, you know, I'm sure he hooted a lot too. But
This is giving me a definition of Joyce as James the bastard. James
he got to be arrogant if Hemingway was around. Absolutely right, man.
This book seems arrogant. It seems like, you know what? Follow me.
Okay, no, wait.
Just try.
Oh, I think you're right, Pam. Absolutely. Well, strangely enough, I just turned to this. I will do that a cordial by mine hand. Says Carras, peace cod.
Peace cod.
And in the flap of a jacket, rectified after his nap of a blanket o' the cousin, as sober as the ship's husband he was, my godfather, when he told me, saw, while upon I am now well and jurely satisfied, and after the boon amours, the widower, according to Ryder, following Panamanea, he has consistently blown to atoms. So help me, Boyg, who helps me the book. God, I mean, how does he go between, like, you talk about genre? He goes between, like, 15 different genres in, like, one page, man. Yeah. Let's just keep people happy and interested in changing it on him, right?
Well,
do you think there's any musical influence on him, you know, in terms of just, like, boom, boom, ba da da?
It's too non-conventionally juxtaposed. It maybe like atonal music. You know, you ever
right.
listen to atonal?
No, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's around the time atonal music was coming into
I'm thinking of
too.
It because you kind of see his boom, boom, and jazz. Boom, 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 boom.
But it's not jazz. It's more like atonal music.
Atonal jazz.
Oh, atonal jazz. I don't think I've listened
well,
to
jazz. Well, jazz is built for atonal music because boom, boom, and rhythmically and tonally, it's all up for grabs, right?
It does have rhythm when you read it.
No, it does, and it's just got this. I think he must have been influenced by atonal jazz, the atonal music of.
I learned about
Berg,
it.
Berg, and who's the other guy? Anyway,
there's.
I think he was, man. I think he was. I think he was. The musicians and the cubists were breaking everything up. So there wasn't really a line that had any real grammatical flow to it, and he was going to break it up, and I think we really hit on something, man. I think we're going to get invited to these universities.
Yeah, I'm so sure. They'll want more white men talking about other white men. I'm sure we'll be a big hit. Yeah.
We're going to be a damn minority pretty soon, man. We're going to be able to get a grant. We're ahead of the curve, Jonah.
That's great.
I don't know.
Oh, I know for sure. I know for sure, man.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just took like one page of that and put it to music, it'd probably make a song. You can hardly understand the songs these days anyways. Well, like, yeah, what they're like saying, you know?
What kind of music? What kind of music? Like,
I think it depends on what captures you when you start to play.
You know,
it'd
be really
funny. Say it and just follow it.
You know, it'd be really funny if it was rap. Like, that would be, that would amuse me.
That's what I immediately thought about.
Rap.
No, you can use long. It's more about speed, really. It's like, you know, you make sure you get through a word real fast.
That's what I was, well, I mean, you would have to read it like you would read music because every 16th beat, I mean, there are a lot of syllables in there that he's changed.
Absolutely.
That are 16ths. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great, great. Commerce. Anytime money is offered, we stop.
Oh, no problem. No problem.
Whatever you want to buy. Great.
That's great. Awesome that you guys do a podcast.
Great.
Well, it's something.
This is fantastic. I think you're right. I mean, we have hit a key. There's no doubt that he's just trying for music. That's what Pam said. I lay it all at her door. But that's right. Everything in it is musical.
I like thinking more about what you were talking about before, about he must have had some kind of system for breaking down words. Because I think, like, even when you're performing music, you have some kind of system.
Okay, I got one. I got one that makes sense here. Okay. Is it turned on?
Yeah.
Okay. Fire apple, putting years on me, nuo nuo, this bolt in hand, be my worder, I'll see you move farther, blarning Mark Antonio. What can such wretch to say, so I or how have my soul doom with him? We were womb full of mischief, and unishumbio wise, ever liking alight, hairy top on heel tipper, Alpi Becca's unwatchables, and I'm Ixon, that babe in principiali, my leopard brethren, the pure, and's innocence of but 15 primes, y'all in your cablioni so trilustriously standing the real school to be upright as his match, healthiest as his egg, savior, so the salt and good wee browed, paralleling butter, did I ultramobile him to flare inciting hog's fat?
And
give me another beer, man. I'm getting on it.
I thought you said we were gonna understand that one.
I did. Give me another beer.
What did you understand from it? I mean, what did you get from it?
Oh, it starts out as Shakespeare.
I think you thought that sentence was going to end when a normal sentence ends.
It did.
And it kept going. And then...
No, I ended on a period. Damn it. I wanted to keep reading. I was like, on it. But no, it started out as Shakespeare, as a Shakespearean dialogue. No doubt about it. This often happens in our podcast, Pam. You hear the...
Do you? Yeah. It'd be kind of funny for each of you to read the same page or the same section,
uh-huh,
and then see what your different interpretations are of it.
Okay, all right. We'll do that.
I'm curious.
And then we'll do that, and then maybe we'll move on. Because I don't know how much more we can milk out of this. Oh,
I don't know. I'm starting to get excited. I think the thing is, you have to drink to excess.
It makes me think that reading's not that hard now.
So I'm gonna do it.
This is good. We're talking another person into reading.
That's all you have to do is drink excelsiorously.
Nice. I like it.
That was very good. That was very good. So now you just need to do that 100,000 more times.
Or excelsi royally.
No, I like the first one better. Because it's closer to...
Multianopolously.
Exactly.
Multianopolously?
Yeah.
What's the second word?
Monopolously.
Monopolously?
Multi-monopolously. It sounds better in my brain, but it means like doing, you know, monopolizing multiple times. Like, get it?
I buy your definition.
All right.
Yeah.
We
multi-monopolously.
This is going to be happening. And I see, and I hear shades of Alice in Wonderland, whom I read yesterday and just laughed the whole time. Everybody was leaving. They were going, God, we can't stand this. Oh, God.
Okay, here it is, a Kay. Paragraph. Kay. It's a, and then you're going to do it after me. Any dog's life you list, you may still hear them at it. Like sixes and seventies, as ever sure as Halley's Comet. Ulamamen, Sobrangiomen, Sothring boys and Duma girls as they pass its bleak and bronze portal of your Cascordia. Huru morni mini frickens, Hurledes hardit it, Lostor on left maldes cu, Milicendo corgadete, Scudi, debote kiri tiputoi, Chakai rote kai makar sahib, Depensame usted, senor en son, Suco sabes, Otha branor acorthariage, Think and think thu gaily? Lick puffle fly high polesipalong lamp. Epilo ecu. Batiste tu van ver dans litit boing going. Ismeme de boomback emes de porticalo. Oh, ois pipos mios de damasadia groasso por o picorolo pocino wifi un duro. Coach sees Sabed. Merci and you. Gomag tak.
Bravo.
It was like Bravo. It was like someone reading Klingon.
I am not going to read. He's living in Italy when he's writing that, and you brought that up beautifully. But you even brought in some Bulgarian laborers on the street that are being paid a kopeck or a lira a day, right, to do work. No, I can't read after that. That was fantastic.
That was really cool.
Oh, it's fantastic, Jonah. Now I see it.
I mean, on the page, it just looks like you're reading a bunch of nonsense.
You just picked up the Italian.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Wow.
Okay. But, no, it's...
I think...
Words I don't know.
You're...
But we have...
Well, no, that's not quite right in his...
Is this thing on?
Yeah, I just turned it on back on.
Well, that's great, because she's reading Droll Stories by Balzac. The translator of Balzac, instead of using Anglo-Saxon words, is just transposing English, French words that have been borrowed into, that have been assimilated into English since the Norman invasion. So there's plenty of bedevilment, there's plenty of every four or five syllable Latin, French word. There's not one simple word in Droll Stories for the whole book. They're all French. So, which makes an interesting point. We talked earlier, what broadcast did we have where we talked about translation?
Well,
but anyway, what would happen if you translated this into Anglo-Saxon? Right? But the other thing is, this is upper-class French.
Yeah.
So they are using three-syllable, four-syllable French words instead of the, you know, the working man's simple word, right? And I hate to be vulgar, but excrement or merde, right?
Yeah.
This translator would use the word excrement, and somebody else would say, that's merde, man.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, I'm glad we kind of brought that in. This is the whole thing about translation, you know?
Hey, well, it's like... What's the English equivalent of the difference between excrement and merde? Shit and what? Defecation?
Excrement is shit. It's the same word.
No, excrement should be defecation, right? And
well, you're
and
right.
Merde should be shit, right?
They're both function both as nouns and verbs. There's no difference, Jonah.
Yeah, well, but you were just making the difference.
No, there is no difference. To shit and shit are the same word.
Right.
And
but you're saying he
excrement
chose this other one on
purpose. And you're right. To excrementer, okay, you want the French?
Yeah.
Voulez-vous excrementer, mon cher?
Oh, that would be a lovely pickup line to give to your buddy who had just met like a French foreign exchange girl. He'd be like, no, I'm telling you, this is going to be great. She's going to love it. She's going to be so into it. She's going to think you're the most charming guy.
You speak high class French.
Yeah.
Oh my God. James Joyce has had a deleterious effect on us, man. On our On our morals, too. Gosh.
Well, I think my morals were already ruined. But.
No, that reading you did was fantastic. We finally got one reading that really brings out his beautiful genius and the joy of the book.
I could just tell by seeing...
There's no boundary between Spanish, English, German, Bulgarian, whatever,
yeah.
And the patois of the Lola, you know, the laborer or the guy up in the high jurisdiction of the law courts of Dublin. I mean, it's all mixed up. It's just so fantastic, yeah. Man.
And I really do like the idea. It's not simply just juxtaposition, which you can do, which Herr Brodsky often did, which people often disliked about Brodsky is he'd go from like really highbrow to really lowbrow in the same sentence. But this is more than that. It's literally smushing it
just
together.
Just splices it, just every second. Yeah. I tell you, man, we could get Miller High Life because your reading of that.
It's
because
we're such a high-class podcast, and this is the champagne.
We're a high-class podcast. This is champagne of bottled beers, Miller High Life. And, that was a tremendous reading of that Italian parody. It was fantastic, man. I mean, listening to it, I could actually hear the foreign Bulgarian workers, you know, on the street, you know, just kind of intruding into that. Are we paid our homage to James Joyce?
Well, yes. I mean, I will happily continue to talk about him or whatever, but I just thought I'd throw something else in just for the hell of it. And this is more personal. It has something to do with the fact that I was looking through some of the old stuff I'd written a decade ago, and I had recreated this quote from Camus, which I'm just going to throw at you, and I want to get your take on it. Because it's a quote that I love, and like I reread it, and I said it was a quote from Camus, but then I was like, was that Camus? Because it sounded so much like it was actually just something I had written myself. But then I wondered why I was so convinced that our style was the same. I mean, obviously I liked Camus very much when I was younger, but... But it's like this, it's this philosophical language that has less to do with philosophy and more to do with the feeling it's supposed to evoke. It's like, it's philosophical language that's couched in this idea that it's not actually an idea. It's the essence of an idea, but and the way it's presented is it sounds like an idea, but really it's just a feeling.
It's the artist's perception of the idea.
Yeah.
Which is modern art.
Right.
Which is the genius of modern art.
Yeah.
It's all about how you perceive your ideas or your music or your painting or the outside. You know, and that's what I'm all about. That's what the great painters taught us, you know, the great thinkers. So yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's true. You've already cracked half of it, but I'll read it anyway. And so, well, these are just notes from the next man, or the first man, that was at the end of the book when he died. So these are just notes that were to expand the novel, but he never got. But the note is, thus expand the personality. So he's like talking about his main character, how to expand his personality. And he gives him a piece of dialogue. He says, when he speaks, I began to believe in my innocence. I was Tsar. I reigned over everything and everyone at my disposal. Then I found out I didn't have enough heart truly to love, and I thought I would die of contempt for myself. Then I recognized that others don't truly love either, and that I just had to accept being like just about everyone. Then I decided no, I would blame myself alone for not being great enough and be comfortable in my hopelessness until I was given the opportunity to become great. In other words, I'm waiting for the time when I'll be Tsar and won't enjoy it. Like, I want to know if there's something messed up with me why I've fixated on
this. Oh, he's such a genius, though.
Yeah.
Such a genius, you know, and it's elemental. You know, it's just elemental. What's the prime fault of being human, being not able to love enough? I mean, he just hits it right away. Camus just goes right to the heart, man. You know, it's a great, great piece. Yeah, and I love the way he sets it. The fact that it's in a notebook, he sets it up is, okay, I want this character to say this, right? Yeah. You know? But I'm the czar now, right?
Right.
Yeah. And that's what's really intriguing about it, is that he's making him an omnipotent ruler of men with total power. And I just find that really, actually kind of disturbing, but that's all
right. I think it's supposed to be, right? It's supposed to be disturbing. You're supposed to be a little scared of your own consciousness. I don't know.
No, you said czar. That's like C-Z-A-R.
Czar. T-S-A-R.
Same word.
Same word, yeah.
That's Russian.
Yeah.
And it also comes from Caesar.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. It's all the same one.
Does it come from Latin? It's based in Latin?
Caesar, yeah. Caesar.
Czar
and Kaiser are all the same one.
Oh. I mean, that seems fairly easy to understand by
never. Well, and that's why I have to defend myself by saying it's all kind of that beautiful thought, and that's the reason I ever wrote it, because it's just pretty hinky, because these type of people don't have these thoughts, man.
What do you mean?
They have been bred for a thousand years to manipulate and destroy other people for their own power.
Right.
So it's just not going to happen to them. But that's what's so charming about the French, you know. They find these cute little fucking ideas.
Well, I mean, it's more than a cute little fucking idea. I mean, I think there's some part of it that related it to me in politics.
Oh, it relates to me. The
idea of, like, well, who's the best kind of president? The president who doesn't want to be president. You know, like, that's the best version of that.
Right. Right, but that goes outside. The essential idea is how you and I and Pam are only, my only criticism of myself is how, why I cannot really love enough, right? And how I always, you know, create, you know, prejudgments that will allow me not to, right? And so that's where he really hits you. I mean, he just goes right to the center of it. And that's Camus' style as well,
yeah.
Is that he will lead you into this real crux of thought that is actually pure philosophy, I think, but then it's because he's a czar, I'm going, now wait a second, man, no, that's just too hinky for me, man, because it's not possible. This doesn't happen. It never happens.
Right.
Look,
it's not real.
Look, the Bourbons of Spain still have 100,000 acres to enjoy in Spain and Mallorca.
Yeah.
And the Germans, they've all got all the money they've had for like 500 years. That's what they're into. And that's the way they are. And to ascribe these emotions to them is just like fatuous. Like that word?
Fatuous or infatuous?
Fatuous. They're not anywhere near the same.
What
There's
about
no root.
How about this?
Fatuous means stupid, and fatuation means more a trance-like magical spell thing.
Here's my Joycean combination of words. Infantile. Like infatuous. Infatuated. Infantile. To be infatuated in an infantile way.
It's fantastic.
Schoolboy crush.
That is fantastic. Who loves more than kids or dogs? Nobody. This is in my novel. Nobody loves more than, yeah, the infatuation of a child or a dog. Mm. There's nothing like it. And that's why you have to protect it. It's like, yeah. Good old Albert, man. Albert's so great. Yeah, thank God he didn't write that book. I think that's why God killed him, because, oh no.
Oh no.
Albert, you're just, you know, I think you're making a little too much money, you're a little too famous.
Well, yeah, who knows? I mean, there's good parts about it. I mean, I wouldn't really recommend anything.
But that's in his notebooks, I thought.
Yeah, it's in the notebooks at the
right,
end.
Right.
Which I kind of preferred. Because
so you know how he got killed, don't you?
Yeah, he's in a car crash with
I lived in France for a year. Those roads, Pam, are as wide as this half of my store. And they're like serpentine. And there's only room for one car at any one time. Yeah, and they've all got a lot of nice fast cars, and yeah, oh man.
And you have to pay more attention than drinking champagne and sitting by the pool.
You've just been drinking a lot of champagne and you're just moving on. Yeah, oh my gosh, though. Isn't that wonderful about him, though? To bring out his soul. But see, that's the whole of the failing of fiction is when you, instead of just going from the direct statement of the truth of what is your criticism of yourself, that you can't love enough, that you reserve a part of yourself, and then why don't you just say that instead of like creating a character that thinks that? You know, at a certain point you lose it.
I couldn't disagree with you more on that point. I think that's exactly what the point of creating a character is because it takes it outside of yourself and it puts it in the mythological or metaphorical framework that actually describes the larger universe at large, right? Because then you've turned your characters into like little math equations, you know, like, and that makes it universal. It's not just about one person anymore. Now it's like, okay, well, what's this universal essence of this personality in relation to the cosmos?
But being a czar is not being a universal. That's
no, but he's talking about the idea of wanting to be czar.
Right, right.
He's not talking about actually being a czar.
Oh, I see.
You know, he's just talking about the feeling of having that kind of control. It's well, I've realized this thing about myself, and I realized that it's not that unique. You know, it's not that unique to not love as much as you feel like you should. You know, that's not that unique. I mean, most people feel that way. Or sometimes when they try too hard to love, they're just making up for the fact that they feel like they don't love enough, you know? So when you make this realization, then you're expanding onto that. Well, I got through that part, and then my thoughts, you guys started leaning back like you were listening to me. And I was like, oh no, oh no. Now I actually have their attention. Now I actually have to say something profound. Oh no.
You were saying profound stuff. Just so you know. You were already there.
Did we lean back simultaneously, Pam? It was I could see it. It was like, God, sorry. He's really saying some really fucking great stuff.
Well, good, we got your flow going on.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely, man.
Well, anyway. It's not like I pre-thought that out or anything over the course of a decade. When I first read that book. But. Well, okay, so I got one more thing to throw at you.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a book from the library, which title is The Cool for America. And it's a series of short stories. And the one that's titled Cool for America, there is an exchange, which I'm not going to put any judgment on beforehand. It goes like this. This guy breaks his leg and he's at home, and this chick comes over to help him out. She brings him cigarettes and pizza and beer, and he's there, and he gets to know her and he likes her, but she's already got a boyfriend, so he's worried about that. But he meets another girl who says of this couple that you know, he, and they're in Montana, and they say and she says, you know, the guy, her boyfriend, he's cool for Montana, but she's cool for America. Thoughts?
Well, yeah, I mean, now you're bringing in the mythic of the, the Madonna, the universal wonderful woman brings him, because I would like a cigarette right now, actually. What do you think, Pam? Well,
I'm still kind of pondering it.
That's a good.
Well,
that's
I
a
mean,
good
you know, obviously, like, this woman is not a feminist. She's not a vegetarian. She's not a vegan. She's, you know, that we're talking pizza, beer, and cigarettes. I mean, the three food groups, other than chocolate, of course.
You know, I.
So what? So I'm really impressed that you could remember that whole phrase, but so yeah, I can see it. She is cool for America, and we do want her around right now.
Okay.
But because if she did bring in pizza and cigarettes and beer right now, we would think she was the greatest woman on earth.
I think I subtly made you believe I was into this story, because I thought it was just fucking stupid. I was just like, oh, whatever, man. I don't know. Like, he was, I don't know. He reminds me a lot of E.L. Doctorow. He's kind of like this, I'm pretty sure he's Jewish. He's a Jewish guy who lived in New York, and then he came to live in Montana for a few years, and he wrote these short stories, and they're almost all about people who write, and like, there's no everyman. There's no Annie Proulx character in there that's just, you know, working at the machinery shop or whatever, you know. They're all vaguely related to artistic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I was just...
You're not saying that he's a trust funder that is living in Bozeman.
I have no idea.
And well, there are a whole bunch of them.
Yeah,
and, you know, you got to be aware of this, because that's the reason that I wrote Crawl on Your Belly Like a Man, because I was so tired of these phonies coming out from the Iowa writers and wherever, and getting jobs at Moscow or ISU or Bozeman or Nevada and writing novels about the West. It pissed me off. So it ruined my life, because I've just, now it's like 20 years I've been writing one novel, man.
And it's don't just write a novel out of spite.
Do not write a novel out of spite. Do not react.
Unless you name it, this is my novel out of spite.
Yeah.
This is my novel out of spite. I would, but I've already chosen the title.
Oh, well, there you go.
And I have to tell you that I put it right there. Bill Schaefer, I Wandered by Bill Schaefer. I stopped by, gentle reader, yesterday from walking all the way down to the north part of the Portneuf and watching it do this whitewater thing and piling up all this these logs and sharp sticks and have these little reversals and everything. And I come back, and I did eat a gummy bear from Colorado before I did, but I'm coming back, and as I'm going through Raymond Park, these families are flying these fantastic Chinese kites that are butterflies and hawks with trailing tails. So I walk by, I'm thinking, you know, I don't like to bother Joan and Stacy, but I gotta tell them, look, you gotta go down there and see these kites. And so Stacy opened the door, and she's getting ready for work. So I wandered on my way. But then I walk by Bill Schaefer, and I'm walking by, and this dog comes by and starts barking at me. And who is across the street but Bill Schaefer and his across-the-street neighbor? And so Bill says, hey. So he comes over, and he has a photograph. And he says, I've got some photographs of the Creators of the Moon. And so he goes in there, and I'm sitting there facing the sun, and I'm watching a little sharp-shinned hawk kind of drift around, you know, the taller trees under the bluff there, under the escarpment of the... And he comes out with this photograph that he took. And finally I went and I said, hey, Bill, look, I'd rather talk about rock and roll and blues in the 60s and 70s than have you look for any photographs. And he says, okay, because I'm a leader, Pam. I know how to make these management decisions. So he comes out and we talk a little bit more. The great story that he told me was about Bootsy, what was his name? The funkadelic maestro that did funk, grand funk, right? And he said that, this is on some YouTube program, and I can't remember what it was, general reader, but he tells me that he's hanging out, and he's a great musician, and all of a sudden, all they're doing all day, these big, strong black guys, are just taking LSD every day and playing music. I'm going, black men are tougher than white men. And he says, they end up somewhere, and James Brown has heard them play and says, I want you guys, and I'm going to get rid of the band I've got. And they go, okay, we're cool with that. But James Brown is no drugs, no alcohol. So they've got this thing where they just do these kind of, you know, fizzy Kool-Aid drinks, and they're sitting around the motel drinking them before the show, and they've got like little sprigs of rosemary and orange in them, and James Brown comes in and he says, "Hey man, give me one of those." They're going, "No, James, you know, really, we've got a Diet Coke for you here." He says, "No, I want that, man." They're going, so he just knocks it down, man. An hour later, they're like playing this big show, right? And James Brown suddenly goes into a trance. And it's like, "I'm communing with the moon god." And it's okay, but it's like 15, 20 minutes goes by. But yeah.
I can just imagine James Brown standing there with his hands in the air. And like, there's this audience that's just prepared for him to be bubbly energy. He's just like, it's like the world's best build up to the next song. Like, you think about if you're watching James Brown doing that for 15 minutes, you'd be like, "Oh my god, this What's next song, this next song gonna is happen. Gonna blow my mind."
Right.
I know. Bootsy. Of course, I love funk. I love Funkadelic, man. But anyway. So, So yeah, there it is. And I finally did it. "Praise for the Ghost" by Will Peterson. In its evocation of the spirit of place, it calls to mind the Alexandria Quartet by Lawrence Durrell, Professor Arthur Dolson.
What's the Alexandria Quartet?
You haven't read it? Mm-mm. By Lawrence Durrell? Mm-mm. Oh, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. Yeah.
Is he a local of some kind? Or?
Lawrence Durrell is... it was after the war, and he just went to Alexandria in Egypt, and there were a lot of French, English expatriates living in Alexandria. But Alexandria, of course, is Greek, and there are a lot of Greek poets, intellectuals there. And it's fantastic, so man. You'll love it. Justine. That's the first book, is Justine. You got to read it, man.
Justine. Durrell.
Justine is
Wait,
the first
what
one.
Year? What year is this?
That's about 1950.
1950. I've never heard of it.
Justine, Balthazar. Oh, yeah, he goes through. The four of them are the four different characters. And Clea. Hmm. I want to go to Alexandria. I mean, you want to go there after you read it. Because we're talking about a Mediterranean climate that's like, 10,000 years old. And, the most beautiful city on earth built by Alexander, you know. And all the Greek poetry. So you've read Constantine Cavafy, right?
You've introduced me to him, yes.
Yeah, he's a good poet.
Yeah.
Yeah, he lived there. Oh, yeah. That's where he kind of hung out. He's pretty happy to be there.
This is great, but...
Are we still recording?
Yeah, But
you believed what I said?
Yeah.
Because I don't want a fatwa right now.
Yeah, no fatwas. I don't think you specifically insulted the religion of Islam. So I did not.
I'm big into Islam. Just not the fatwas.
Did he ever tell you? Did Arthur ever tell you how a quartet of individual novels set in Alexandria?
Spirit of Place.
Oh, okay.
He said your bar scenes are really good.
Spirit of Place.
Spirit of Place. He said in my novel and the ghost, not so much crawling about like a man, but the ghost, he got the feeling that he was like really there, like he was reading one of the greatest novels of all time. So I felt charmed that I was able to
just like the Alexander.
Well, it's not like I was self-aggrandizing or didn't say it myself. I wouldn't have said it myself.
You did.
Myself. Let's just move on here.
Well, we can move on. We can move on. What do you got in your chamber, Pam?
I'm just enjoying this.
This has been so great. Yes. Oh. Yeah. The scotch is... We still got some left there. I'm going to try a little sip of this to make sure that I'm not poisoning you. So what's the next thing going to be?
I don't know.
What are we going to talk about next time?
I have some small sense of maybe if you wanted to do Ian McEwan. Ian McEwan's got a couple middle stage novels. The guy who wrote Atonement and... I didn't like Atonement very much, and I didn't like him. But I'm reading one right now that's called Saturday. That's it's just got a whole page of Bellow, Herzog and Bellow, as its opening quotations. So, you know, I'm going to like it. I mean, basically, it's... It took him a while until his middle period to finally realize that he should write like Bellow, but he eventually did. And
that's pretty good whiskey.
This Saturday though, this book Saturday is I think you'll like it. It's about a neurosurgeon, so it starts off with like a doctor's life, and it's I think you'll actually enjoy it. I think
you'll like it. God, we're hoping anyway. I lost the book I've been reading. Darn it.
The other one I was going to try and talk you into doing was The Bell Jar, which I sort of read on my own.
Mm-hmm.
But you said you're too sensitive.
Thank you.
You're too sensitive to feminine...
I think I've been treating you pretty good, Pam. I think this Johnny Walker is pretty good whiskey.
Yeah, it's
good. It is. Thank you.
We're not doing any low-class stuff here, man. We're doing nothing but high life.
Absolutely high life. I can see that all around me.
Okay, I can't... I got to pass on Ian McEwan, and I got to pass on...
You're passing on Ian McEwan. Why are you passing on Ian McEwan? This is you telling me why you're passing on Ian McEwan is good enough as
separate podcast. I started reading Atonement, and it was like,
yeah, but Atonement isn't that good. His period novels are not that good.
Okay, so I'm gonna read Saturday then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Either that or Enduring Love. Enduring Love's kind of
right.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those writers that's just written too much. You know, he's just like I read once. I don't know. A while ago, that Ian McEwan was coming out in defense of novellas. He's like, more writers should release novellas. And at that time, I had just read his book called Solar, which I was like, this book could have definitely been a novella, and it would. And I was like, if you're gonna defend it, I think you should do it yourself. You know, like this book was too longer than it needed to be.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's. That's,
I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think one of the most glorious things is writers talking about other writers, you know. That's where all the wonderful,
you know, if you'll sell me a copy of Joseph Campbell, we could do that next week, if you got one.
Oh.
Or not next week.
But, yeah. Yeah, I've got to,
Do you have one?
I don't have one in right now. They're just really hard, and a lot are out of print. I'm not sure whether drinking Johnny Walker and Miller High Life is really that good for me right now. So,
well, we can.
But you know, I'm becoming a big fan of Johnny Walker. That is really good whiskey, man.
I became a fan of him today.
I know we are gonna get. If we could just get a sponsorship from Johnny Walker, we might get some Johnny Walker Black.
Let me see what this I can was do. Just I'll try to work my
this
magic.
Was just Johnny Walker Red, and that's good whiskey.
You know what? Christopher Hitchens said about Johnny Walker Black.
Mm-hmm.
He said it's the best Scotch in the world.
Yeah.
He said for bang for your buck,
yeah,
Johnny
yeah.
Walker Black is the best.
Right, Scotch. Right. And we were just like one step from it. My gosh, I don't want this to end, but I think we're gonna have to, darn it, because we went through. We went through two different writers.
We're keeping it high and tight this podcast.
We are, and we haven't decided for next week.
That's all right.
The thing about Joseph Campbell is that you're just like a hero with a thousand faces. You're talking about a book that you could like read. It's just so powerful and weird, man. And McDonald's America, Cool for America, No, Joseph Campbell is not cool for America, man. We're talking human beings and social control and the imagery of blood, sadism. Oh, man, the idea of God. Joseph Campbell is just like so totally out there. You just can't even talk about it. So, and I think it's out of print for that reason, man. Everything in America that's really good is out of print because it's too powerful, it's too deep, too disturbing, you know.
It's all the more reason to do it. That's just it talking me into it.
I don't think I can get one, though.
Next month, Joseph Campbell.
Next month, yes, yes, yes.
All right, we'll call it.